This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Saturday, October 17th, 2020. I'm Caleb Brown. The conspiracies run hot around this White House. Jesse Walker, author of The United States of Paranoia, says it's easy for us to say that this, right now, is the golden age of conspiratorial thinking. And yet, he argues widespread, politically impactful conspiracy theories have been with us and our politics for a very long time. The president has 87 million Twitter followers. And just as I was setting up this recording with you this week, the president tweeted out a story that made some very strange claims. I believe this was from a QAnon conspiracy account that Osama bin Laden was not killed by SEAL Team 6, that in fact it was a body double, and that members of SEAL Team 6 had then been killed by the previous administration. That seems insane.
I gather there are some intense debates going on now between the defenders of SEAL Team 6 who want to say, no, they really did get this kill, even though we hate Obama, versus the people who are saying, no, it was all a great fraud. But yes, this is not one of the plausible conspiracy theories you might run into from time to time, even if it has been apparently embraced for this moment, this morning at least, by the President of the United States.
So when we hear conspiracy theories thrown out there, but first of all, we have to admit, as even Robert Anton Wilson, the great connoisseur of conspiracy theories, would admit, there are a lot of conspiracies out there.
Yeah, sure. People conspire. It's in the language for a reason.
So when we hear these kinds of theories that surround politics, how do you think about them?
Like things like Trump's tweet or—
For example—
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just, that's the sort of story that people just kind of generate. And some of them, a lot of them are generated basically by people trying to get, you know, clicks, or in the past, it would have been trying to sell newsletters or something like that and feeding people what they want to hear. And sometimes they're generated by people just speculating wildly in ways that have more to do with, you know, their own internalized preferences, what they want the world to look like, than any sort of familiarity with what evidence or, you know, or the tenets of investigative journalism or anything that would expose a real conspiracy would look like. So, and, you know, Trump is such a purely reactive guy. I mean, he sees something that seems to reinforce what he thinks or what he wants people to think, and he's got that kind of magical thinking to him where if you say something enough times, it'll be true. So he's constantly signal boosting this stuff. I don't know if he believes it at the moment that he retweets it and then forgets it when he retweets something contradictory, or if he never believes it and it's purely, I mean, he probably doesn't even begin to believe this stuff, you know, but who knows? He's just a bundle of impulses. So I mean, in this particular case, it's like this intersection of these people who have their own reasons for generating these stories, people who have ideological reasons for believing them, and a president who is not very discerning in what he chooses to share with his followers. At least not very discerning along the lines of truth. Of course, that's not the only kind of conspiracy theory there is, but yeah.
What have been, you wrote a book about conspiracy theories, some popular, some unpopular, at least within the United States. What's been the most widely believed conspiracy theory out there?
The most widely believed conspiracy theories are the ones that people don't call conspiracy theories because they're so widely believed, they're just taken as being part of the, you know, the firmament. Of course that's happening. Let's just sort of assume we're not counting conspiracies that really exist. I won't call you a conspiracy theorist for believing in Watergate or Iran-Contra or something that's everyone sort of acknowledges was there. I mean, a lot of the stories going on right now about human trafficking, I mean, the more bizarre and extreme ones are the QAnon type ones, which are very much a minority taste. I mean, there have been some kind of sloppy polls that suggest they're more popular than they are. But the general idea of these sort of vast human trafficking networks that are, you know, not just the existence of human traffickers, which of course exists, but are like stalking Walmarts to seize your children while your back is turned. I mean, that kind of stuff's been all over Facebook for years. Sometimes it gets uncritically signal boosted by local news stations. And some versions of it, I mean, sometimes the police will throw cold water on it, but other times they'll signal boost it, or they'll throw cold water on it and then say, but you should keep, of course, you should keep your eyes out, you know, and be alert for anything that might happen, because, you know, God forbid that you say, yeah, that's not true. And then someone gets kidnapped and everyone freaks out. And then the slightly more toned down stuff, of course, is used by police agencies and politicians to build up their power. The authorities that they have under the law to arrest and charge people. And that's not an unusual thing. I'd say human trafficking because that's recent, but we've seen versions of this happen, you know, with like building up the drug war, you know, at the various Red Scares and Brown Scares that at different times have built up, you know, the FBI's power over the past century. And sometimes people can look back and realize, oh yeah, we all believed in a dubious conspiracy theory, like after the 1980s, at the time of the 1980s, it was widely believed that these satanic cults were everywhere, molesting kids, infiltrating daycare centers, maybe even doing human sacrifices. And
I was told that playing Dungeons and Dragons was pretty much a direct path into Satanism when I was a kid.
Sure. I mean, if you one moment you're casting a spell for your druid and the next you're, you know, out in the woods casting a real spell. But yeah, so this was, you know, people went to jail, you know, and there were, I mean, for decades, sometimes some of them not let out till very recently. You had, TV shows like 2020 doing and Geraldo and so on. But I forget Geraldo because everyone expects Geraldo to be a sensationalist. But, you know, 2020, nighttime news magazine show, Hugh Downs is there, widely respected. Barbara Walters, you know, doing this report on Satanism in the mid to late 1980s. I don't remember the exact year, which had like no critical voices and made some of the most absurd claims you could imagine. They talked about sacrifices and like the guy and the reporter just says, well, they haven't found the bodies yet, but maybe it's because they're disposing of them in this way. I mean, it's just it's insane to watch nowadays. And so, you know, but that was mainstream. Nowadays, people who remember that, you know, can look back and say, oh, yeah, that happened. That was strange. That was a widely believed conspiracy theory. In the 1980s, very few people, I mean, there were skeptics, you know, who posted articles saying, you know, this is nonsense, you know, popped up in places like The Humanist. I saw one in a police magazine telling other policemen, please don't take this stuff seriously that people are sending around. But it's if you ask people then to say what's a conspiracy theory, they'd say, oh, the JFK assassination, which was very widely believed, like the 80% in one poll in like 1983. Believed that some sort of conspiracy, they didn't agree on which one, killed Kennedy. But people say, oh, the CIA weather control, or, you know, I mean, people could mention all these ideas that were usually unpopular. And even if they were popular, like the JFK one, sort of looked down upon in the mainstream, they were not going to bring up the one that the mainstream was embracing, because conspiracy theory has become a pejorative term. And so people don't associate it with the ones that are widely believed and embraced by big institutions.
Do you think the last 5 years have been different with respect to conspiracy theories, their dissemination, the willingness of politicians to openly flirt with conspiracy theories?
So I think there's been a spike, probably. There's two. You asked about the last 5 years. That's the better question. A lot of people think it's the internet, and they'll think it's been steadily increasing since the 90s. And I don't think there's good evidence for that. But I do think that there are good reasons to think that it's been spiking recently. And in part, that's because, Donald Trump is, he's certainly not the first president to espouse conspiracy theories, but he's utterly shameless about it. He doesn't care if they're reputable. He doesn't care if his source is some QAnon account he's retweeting or, you know, or the National Enquirer, as he did with the thing about Ted Cruz's dad and the JFK assassination. So that's, and, you know, whoever is sort of the leader of a party sets the tone for, you know, half the country or half the politically engaged country. But then beyond that, I think that before I was talking about what's reputable and what's not, and one sort of artifact of the sort of media and political sorting of the last several years is that something can be reputable among the Fox watching public, but not the MSNBC watching public. It can be and vice versa. You know, a lot of the sort of more absurd Russiagate stuff that Rachel Maddow was promoting was completely reputable, at least for a while, on one side of the aisle and considered utter crankery on the other. And so we've got this kind of, you know, dueling publics effect. And I hate any talk of two Americas because there's so much more than two Americas. And it's not like everybody is either a Fox watcher or an MSNBC watcher. Most people don't watch either one, frankly. But it's, but in terms of like how elite institutions behave and how they set the tone, I think that could have an impact as well. So something that if you see a lot more people, you know, politicians saying things that seem disreputable to you, well, maybe it's less disreputable than in their circles. I should add, though, there's always some politicians who are willing to be just disreputable, period. We're probably going to have, as of next year, a congresswoman from Georgia who has a past as a QAnon believer. And she is sort of backed down from that now, but she was willing to believe that stuff, and she's believed a lot of other stuff, you know. But it's not, I mean, we've in the past, we've had, you know, Bercher congressman, we've had some conspiracy theorists on the left in Congress. I mean, if sometimes either due to quirks that show up when people don't expect them to, I mean, after a while, or just because it's a very safe district and a lot of stuff that's sort of taken as a matter of faith at the party grassroots, but not elsewhere, are more likely to be, you know, rewarded at the ballot box, or at least not punished. You're going to have some people pop in. So that's why you have 50 years ago, John Schmitz was, you know, a congressman from California and ran in 1972 on a sort of Birchite presidential ticket, got more than 1 million votes, later drifted off towards the Holocaust denial crowd and so on. Although that I believe was after he was in Congress. But, you know, I mean, he was coming from this intensely conservative part of Southern California. Cynthia McKinney in Georgia, coming from the other direction politically, at least back then. Now she's all over the place politically. But again, she was coming from a community that was not going to be as put off by the stuff she was saying about the Bush administration and 9/11 and so on.
You said that you don't think that there's a lot of evidence that the internet itself, and maybe we want to separate off social media from the internet for the purposes of this discussion, but the internet certainly empowers information, whether false or true, to travel much faster than it could have in the early 90s or the 80s. Is there anything you can put your finger on to say, Here's a good reason why we seem to be seeing a lot more conspiracy theories being given credence? I mean, even ridiculous conspiracy theories given more credence than they would have been given years ago.
Well, the internet has sped up the production of conspiracy theories. It's also sped up the disposal of them. And it's not completely clear if, you know, one outweighs the other. But I mean, looking just at public opinion surveys, and other measures, there's just no sign of like there being a takeoff in various conspiracy theories popularity after, you know, the internet was the mass adoption of the internet. And I think, and I'm not convinced it's true that I'm saying there's sort of a spike in the Trump era, but I don't think that's likely to be a permanent spike. I think there are spikes at different points in time. There was a spike around Watergate. There was a spike in the early Cold War. And I think there's a number of reasons now why we could see a spike, you know, at this moment in time. But I don't think that's a permanent condition. And I think a lot of what people are seeing in terms of, I mean, my book, you know, came out in 2013. And back then, everyone was saying, well, lucky you, this came out at this intense time of conspiracy theories. Aren't you glad it came out this year? It's just perfect for you. Now it's 2020. Do you think of 2013 as a golden age of conspiracy theories? No, see? You know, and there were reasons. I mean, we had a very big, real conspiracy exposed just as it was coming out.
What I was thinking of, 2013. Oh, that's when we were told that the government was spying on Americans en masse.
Yeah, but, you know, if it had come out 2 years earlier, people would say, wow, you're the birchers. It's the perfect moment. You know, if it had, I mean, it's always supposed to be a golden age of conspiracy theories because most of these things people forget. Even if they believe them, a lot of times people forget them. And people who aren't really politically engaged are certainly quick to forget them, or else they remember them in this kind of, you know, way that it, I mean, like people have all sorts of people who are not totally politically engaged often have very strange, what will look like someone who is really politically engaged, memories of what, you know, the last 30 years or whatever politics looks like, just because they were not constantly plugged into this, this churn that we are. And in some ways that can be, it makes it more sane because they don't remember these big flare-ups for a week that wound up being a tempest in a teapot.
Is part of that just that these commitments to appreciating the reality of a phony conspiracy theory, these commitments are just pretty weak among most people?
Yeah, I mean, or even if they... But it's also true, people might remember something that was totally debunked and everyone who was plugged in thought it was sort of recognized that it was debunked, but it stuck around because they read an article and then they didn't read the follow-up. It can cut both ways, but but in general, people just forget what the manias are. I have to remind people about the satanic panic, usually. I mean, not people who write about this stuff as well, but... and younger people, you know, don't know what happened unless they happen to be deeply interested in reading these histories. And then the flip side is, I mean, sometimes things do stick around. Like the this is not a conspiracy thing, but it's kind of a sort of more ethereal sort of paranoia. But you remember when people thought that Jared Lee Loughner, when he did that mass shooting, including, you know, hitting Giffords down in the Southwest, that he had been inspired by this map that Sarah Palin had distributed, which had targets over these different parts of the country.
It was like vaguely
sort of targets of, these were like the incumbent Democrats they were targeting, you know. It's kind of a familiar metaphor. And someone immediately dug up a similar thing where, you know, a Democrat had done, you know, a similar graphic. And some people said, yes, but the Democrats graphic looked like the target for a bow and arrow. And this one looks like for a gun. It became this stupid back and forth. But then it became clear. I mean, first of all, it was unlikely. It was extremely unlikely that he had even seen this map. But then when his worldview came out, it turned out he was not plugged into red versus blue politics at all. He was had all these extremely cranky ideas about money and, you know, fakeness of reality and so on. And it was just a complete, he was not on the left, right. The phrase I used when I was covering it at the time was new age paranoia. You know, I mean, it's just, it's a totally different mindset. But every now and then someone will pop up and say, oh yeah, and there was that guy who shot the person because of the target. I mean, people remembered the initial wave of stories and they didn't necessarily see the debunking. But then again, the people who do that, they don't remember that as a paranoid story. They think it's true. So anyway, I've gone way off on a tangent here. The important thing was that it's always supposed to be a golden age of conspiracy theories. And I won't be surprised if people remember there a lot of the stuff around the Trump era, just because the Trump era is so weird in so many ways. So weird that we've actually already forgotten probably half the things that have happened that ordinarily we would remember for years, because things come one after another. But people will remember that there were a lot of strange conspiracy theories. In the same way, a lot of people remember, oh yeah, right around Watergate, there were a lot of conspiracy theories. Like, they were popping up in movies and so, yeah. But that, it's kind of rare for it to sort of really sear public memory that way. And I don't even know if, I won't even firmly predict that people will remember this, because people's capacity for amnesia is stunning.
Historically, is there a conspiracy theory that was at once false and incredibly politically impactful?
Sure. I mean, it's. My book goes back to the days of the colonies and the conspiracy theories people had about, you know, Indians and about people allegedly plotting slave revolts and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, places where boundaries were born were drawn were impacted by conspiracy theories. Laws were passed that were impacted by conspiracy theories. The first union of English colonies, the New England Confederation, was formed in the wake of the Pequot War, in part because of, you know, the sort of conspiratorial fears of sort of unified Indian plotters who might attack and the need to unify. I mean, the Declaration of Independence is shot through with conspiracy theories. They don't just list all the abuses of the king. They outright say that it was a plan that they added up to an attempt to bring the colonists under despotism, and that prompted a revolution. The lead up to the Civil War was filled with conspiracy theories on both the northern side and the southern side. Pretty much every crisis produces conspiracy theories, and then the conspiracy can be a feedback loop where that intensifies, or in some cases sort of launches the crisis. So it's once you realize that they're present in every period of history, the question stops being, you know, are any conspiracy theories being impactful? It's, okay, what are the conspiracy theories here and what impact are they having?
Jesse Walker is the books editor at Reason Magazine. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast anywhere you please and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.